Brothers and sisters, this week's gospel is a continuation of the gospel that we heard last week. Undoubtedly, you recall last week that we heard St. Peter's great confession of faith. Peter responded to Jesus' question, "Who do you say that I am?" by declaring, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." This profession of faith was so spot on that Jesus called Peter the rock, and he established his church on Peter's profession of faith. Now, after having established the church on the rock-solid foundation of Peter's confession, Jesus lays out the cost. He informs his apostles that he will go to Jerusalem, where he will suffer greatly and be killed. A great drama is unfolding. Jesus, the Son of God, is going to go into the all-important city of Jerusalem. He, the Anointed One, the Christ, the Son of the living God, is going into the power center of the world, bearing God's divine love. And for that, he will greatly suffer and be killed. Now, this may sound overdramatic. After all, why would someone bearing God's love be killed? Well, friends, in a world that's been marred by sin, the divine love will always be seen as a threat. We see this in our own world today. Our society views religion as a threat, and it relegates it to the private sphere. Or when school children or politicians wish to pray in public, such attempts to pray are called inappropriate. The powers of the secular world persecute the church when she attempts to deliver the message of the culture of life, when she speaks about the dignity of each person from the moment of conception to the moment of natural death, or when she upholds the dignity of marriage as the union between one man and one woman, as this is an affront to the reigning culture of death. Jesus informs his disciples that the world, marred by sin, is not going to receive him with joy. Those who are heavily invested in the sinful ways of the world will not only attempt to quash Jesus by putting him to death, but they'll be successful in their attempt. This news didn't sit too well with Peter. Peter responded, "God forbid, Lord, no such thing shall ever happen to you." What a great human response. Peter captures what we all feel. We don't like to suffer, and we don't like to see our friends suffer. When we hear that someone we love is going to suffer, we say, "God forbid that it should happen." And in fact, in many cases, we take it one step further and say, "And if God won't forbid it, then I'll forbid it." And we do everything in our own power to prevent our loved ones from suffering. And in doing so, we become an obstacle, a stumbling block. Jesus responds to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an obstacle to me." Friends, Jesus is making an important point here. Anyone who wishes to be a bearer of divine love must be prepared for the cross. You know, too often we expect Jesus to take away our suffering and to make our lives easy. And this attitude often becomes a stumbling block to the Christian life. I mean, think of the number of people who have left the church as a result of suffering in some form. This happens despite the fact that Jesus himself informs his disciples, "Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." Friends, the cross is an essential aspect of Christianity. There's no Christianity without the cross, and anyone who says otherwise is a deceiver, an obstacle to the faith. The Christian faith isn't about making us feel good and happy all the time. The Christian faith is about truth. The truth is that anyone living the Christian life will be made to suffer. The cross is not an afterthought. It's essential to Christianity. That's why I made sure there was an altar cross on my altar today, to make sure I'm mindful of that. Because we do ourselves a great disservice whenever we gloss over that fact. And yet, we Christians tend to do this all the time, especially in our own country. I became keenly aware of this when, as a seminarian, I was sent to Mexico to study for a summer. Every church that I visited in Mexico had crucifixes that vividly depicted the suffering of Jesus on the cross. And it made me realize how in the U.S., we tend to gloss over the suffering of the cross. In many of our Catholic churches, the crucifix has been sanitized in such a way that Christ almost looks comfortable hanging upon the cross. In some of our churches, they've even removed the suffering Christ from the cross and put a resurrected Christ on the cross. And if you go into many Protestant churches, there's just a cross without a corpus on it at all. Now, I'm not advocating that we should find the most grotesque images that we can find and hang them up in our churches. But I'm saying that we cannot turn our eyes from human suffering. We cannot refuse to look at the suffering of the cross, and nor can we sanitize it. We need to see the brutality of the cross. If we deny the cross, then we've lost our Christian faith, and we've replaced it with something that's irreconcilably other. The Christian faith doesn't tell us that bad things will never happen. In fact, it upholds the opposite. It guarantees that we will suffer. The good news is not that we will never suffer. In a world marred by sin, we know that we will suffer. The good news is that suffering does not mean that God has abandoned us. That suffering is not a sign that God doesn't care. The good news is that when we suffer, we're actually drawn closer than ever to God, who suffered with us and for us. The cross is not a scandal to Christianity. It's our hope. Blessed Basil Moreau, the founder of the Congregation of Holy Cross, which are the priests that run the University of Notre Dame, by the way, go Irish, he founded his community with the motto, Ave Crux Spes Unica. Hail the cross, our only hope. We mustn't lose sight of the fact that the cross is not a scandal. It's a sign of hope. It's a sign of hope because it reminds us that we are not of this world and that this world is passing away. In light of the increasingly widespread massacre of Christians, especially in the Middle East, we may be tempted to think that Christianity is a religion for those without hope. But in the midst of this persecution stands the cross, the great sign of hope for Christians. There's a great irony in that those who are torturing and slaughtering Christians are not showing their dominance over Christianity. Rather, they're uplifting what is at the very heart of Christianity, the cross. The cross calls us to witness to something that's beyond this world by losing our lives for the sake of Christ. If we want eternal life, we need to place our hope outside of this world. Suffering is only a curse for those who believe that this world has the final say, for those who believe that this world is the only source of reality. For those who are able to see beyond this world, suffering is not a curse, but a witness to something much greater. When you embrace your suffering, no matter how big or how small your suffering is, what you're saying is, I can accept this burden because I know that it doesn't have the final say. And in doing so, you cease to live for yourself. You lose your life for the sake of Christ by pointing to the fact that our hope is not in this world, but in God. Christ's suffering pointed to a greater reality, the resurrection. If we lose our lives for the sake of Christ, then our suffering is not without meaning. It's not without purpose. Through suffering, we will be united to Christ, and we will give witness to the fact that there's something greater than the powers of this world, that our hope is not that we will live forever here on this earth, but that we will lose our life in this world so as to gain eternal life with Christ in heaven. Brothers and sisters, peace to you and to all who lose their life for the sake of Christ.